Welcome to the Great Loop Radio Podcast, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about looping in a fast boat and some of the ways that you can make that more safe and more courteous for everybody else that's on the water as well. And this is the topic that gets asked a lot. We are not in this discussion looking at what the world speed record is. We're just kind of talking about a typical looper who prefers to travel a little bit faster. And, you know, we'll see what that looks like. Our guest today is Tom Gutowski. He is a gold looper. He'll tell us a little bit of his story. But before we bring Tom in, I want to take a moment, as always, to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes and Associates, Great Loop Yacht Sales, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners and viewers to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And with the business out of the way, I want to officially welcome Tom Gutowski to the Great Loop Radio Podcast. Tom, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Kim. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to see you in that beautiful spot today. So I mentioned you're a gold looper, and so you are obviously on land at the moment. But tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your Great Loop. And since the topic today is looping a little bit faster on a faster boat, go ahead and tell us how long it took you from start to finish.
So Kim, sort of as background, we were reluctant loopers 6 years ago, probably attended three major rendezvous to gradually convince ourselves that this was something we wanted to do. I certainly wanted to do it. My wife really became more and more enamored as we continue to learn more. So we, after a lot of planning and thought, and then finally purchasing our boat, we started from Vero Beach, Florida last April 1st.
And tell us about the boat that you and Janice ended up selecting.
Yeah, so that's always a big issue. And let's see if I can do this here. The boat that we really decided to do it on was a 42-foot galleon. Now, galleon is a Polish-built boat. I did not see another galleon on the loop while we were looping, but I do think there may be two or three of them in phases of looping. It's a 42-foot boat. It has two D6 Volvo Penta engines, so it's capable of going fast or slow. I wanted a boat that could go both ways, although for a while I was uncertain as to what boat I wanted, and I also wanted a boat that had a flying bridge. Those were the two kind of prerequisites that we ultimately set upon, and a galleon 42-fly was what we ultimately selected.
Mm-hmm. And so what was it about this particular boat that made it the right one? Obviously, it met those very specific criteria, but what else about it did you love about this boat?
So before I had this boat, I had a pod-driven boat. And again, this is not an endorsement of pods or no pods. I mean, everyone will make their own decision. But I did manage to hit a sandbar at about 20 miles an hour with my pod-driven boat, and that wasn't a good thing.
No.
So I decided, thankfully, the pod was retained, but I did bend my propellers. So I decided that I wanted a straight shaft boat, which this boat has. I wanted two full staterooms and two full heads, which this boat has. And I also wanted two steering stations. So there's a station up on the bridge and a station down below. Those are topics that you could almost have a podcast on by themselves. Do you need two driving stations, one driving station?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really wanted the two driving stations. And I have to tell you, at the end of the loop, I was thrilled that we did it that way. So we would travel in inclement weather, and we would just go down below, and we're just as snug as you could want to be. And yet on a nice day, you could see we have the bridge open there. You can really feel the air through your hair. So those were my criteria. I wanted two driving stations, straight shaft driven boat. I wanted two full staterooms and two full heads. And I wanted the ability to go both fast and or slow.
Yeah. And that's the thing I think so many people don't really think about when they are contemplating what boat and contemplating a go fast boat, so to speak, versus a trawler or something along that line. And you know, if you have a fast boat, it doesn't mean you have to go fast, certainly not all the time. So, you know, I think that's a lesson that people are starting to realize. One other just question about how you looped and in your own loop. You mentioned that Janice was kind of reluctant. How did she find the adventure after having been reluctant? Was it something she continued to kind of reluctantly go along with, or did she enjoy it?
Well, you know, you as a captain get to be a better captain as you know, move through your loop, and your mate gets to be a better mate. They're more comfortable. Certainly, the one thing I had to respect is that I'm a little bit more of a risk taker. She's not. And when she really told me I'm not comfortable going, we wouldn't go. Now, she got less risk adverse as we move forward. So, when I say risk, well, let's say it's a 3 foot seaway and the winds were going to be 13 to 17 knots. You know, if the wind is sort of on our stern, I probably would go that day. She reluctantly learned that we were very comfortable in those conditions provided, and then would later on in the cruise go better. Key thing, don't go out on bad days with a mate that, you know, really is trying to make a go of it. So respect their reluctance, and you'll see in time they get less reluctant as they become more comfortable with how you and the boat handle.
Yeah, that's great advice. So tell us the name of the boat and tell us how you arrived at that. I know the answer to the question, but
Well, good, Kim.
I love
I'm
it.
glad
So, yep, go ahead and
you
tell us.
remember. Yeah. So, my former life was that of an orthopedic surgeon. So I wanted something that would incorporate what I did. So ortho was a perfect term. So how do we get all that in there? So bone ortho was part of it. And then when we hit on voyage, that's what I wanted. Jan had a few other names like Family Tides, and one that she thought was cute was Smooth Operator. Although, Kim, I could never announce I'm the smooth operator to a tugboat captain. So I had to jettison that one. But we took it to the rendezvous. And we asked the group as we walked up as to be loopers now. We hadn't started the loop yet, but we needed to name our boat. We put out the five names, and the crowd clapped their number one choice, what happened to be a Bon Voyage. And so that is how we ended up naming our boat. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, and it's a moment after having, you know, been to, gosh, 20 plus rendezvous, I'm sure. It's a moment I remember. So it was certainly a lot of fun, and you were committed to going with what the crowd thought, and that was Bon Voyage, and it was a great name. So tell us, you know, we're talking about looping faster. How fast does Bon Voyage go at wide open throttle?
You know, Kim, I wrote that down because I'm sure that's of interest to people. When we're going about 1,000 RPMs, we're burning about 1.6 gallons per hour, and we're going about 6 knots. So we're not as efficient as, say, a trawler, but you know, that's very efficient. You know, 1.6 gallons an hour, 6 knots of speed, which is probably even a little fast in some tight slipways. So you can see that our boat can travel slowly, reasonably efficiently, not as efficiently as others, though. We would cruise when we would be underway. For instance, I do like to go out in the ocean. So on a nice day, we once made the passage from Atlantic City to Norfolk in the ocean because we were a little bit behind on our planning. So there we're going 2,600 RPMs. We're burning 23 gallons an hour. And we're going about 20 miles per hour, 22 miles an hour, about 19 knots. So you could see anywhere in that spectrum would be just how quickly we are going. But it can get rather expensive. You know, when you're going 2,600 RPMs, you're burning 23 gallons of diesel fuel an hour. You need to really want to do that because it is not terribly efficient. But there may be reasons such as weather. In this case, it was really family driven. We needed to be at a certain place to get to a wedding. Not desirable by all, but nonetheless, I think that would be one of the advantage that like a faster boat would offer you. And yet by the same token, you can throttle right back to that 1.6 gallons an hour and go 6 knots.
Right. So lots of flexibility there, depending on how much fuel you're willing to burn. What did you find to kind of be, you know, your sweet spot or your typical cruising speed? Not, you know, not talking about when you were in a no-wake zone or in the canals that have a speed limit, but just kind of in general, what was your sweet spot for the speed you like to cruise on the Great Loop?
You know, we like that 1500 RPM, 9 miles an hour, 8.2 knots, approximately burning around 5 gallons an hour. That would be a speed, you know, where you're moving along, I am creating a bit of a wake, so I need to be very cognizant, even at that speed. And then, you know, our ocean speed, our passage speed, where we're trying to make a bit more of a passage, we would bump it up to that faster number that I told you about. So that would sort of be where we would be.
So a question I get all of the time from people who are interested in doing the loop a little bit more quickly is how much of the loop can you do quickly? How much can you be up on plane versus how much is no wake or a canal where there's a speed limit? It's a really hard question to answer because as we're going to talk about in a minute, there's many other times that you slow down in addition to no wakes or canals. But if you had to estimate and put a number on it, how much of the loop would you say that you did at a faster speed, and how much did you just kind of, it kind of plug along at that somewhere between, 6 and 9 knots?
You know, Kim, I think in our particular case, it probably was 50-50. So when you think about the Great Lakes, when you think about wide open spaces, even many of the places on the rivers that are quiet and desolate and there are no other boats around, if you are, for whatever your personal need might be, you can do that loop at that speed quite comfortably. Safe, comfortable, always the fuel efficiency thing is a personal factor. And I don't want to get into the ecology of it or the efficiency of it. If you just decide for whatever reason, and I was still working, that was our main reason, and we were having grandkids quickly, and two weddings really forced us to sort of be at certain positions at certain times. So the quicker boat made sense for us in regard to our loop. We did it in 10 months. You know, our loop was 10 months. We actually flew home three separate times because of events that we needed to attend or work issues that I needed to be with. And I would say we were about 50-50 at that 20 mile an hour zone versus our 6 to 8 knot zone.
And 10 months is not that short. You know what I mean? Even though 50% of the time you're estimating you were traveling in the 20 knot zone, our loop, we had planned to be 10 months at kind of a normal, quote unquote, whatever that is, but a normal looper pace. But starting from Florida is different, I think, than starting from somewhere else, because a lot of loopers meander a bit in Florida over the winter. So we had spent 3 months in Fort Myers and then planned to take 10 months to do the loop, returning to Fort Myers and then spending 3 months there again as winter. But the travel would have been 10 months had Hurricane Ian not taken out the dockage there and caused us to reassess and change plans. But 10 months is a reasonable time. We always encourage everybody to do the loop in the way that works for them, in a way that's meaningful and pleasurable to them, is with safety first. And that's one of the things when you kind of approached me about this topic, I love that your focus is on how to go fast, but do it in a safe and courteous manner. So we definitely want to make sure that we save some time for that. Before we jump into that, just kind of last question. Did you keep track at all of how much more fuel you think you might have burned because you were going at faster speeds versus if you had just continued at the 6 to 8 knots for the majority of the loop?
You know, Kim, I did not. And my rationale there was, you know, I bought this nice boat. I knew we'd have to go quickly. And I didn't want to make myself miserable by, you know, learning how much more it was costing me to go quickly. So we had the luxury of being able to do it, quite frankly. And as a consequence of that, I just said I was not going to try to, if we needed to move along, for the reasons that we kind of briefly touched on, I did not calculate how much more. But I will say this, if you just look at it very easily, if you're burning 6 gallons an hour, when we're at that faster speed, we're burning almost 25 gallons an hour. So you can see that it is a significant incremental cost to move along more quickly. I think you accept that if you decide you want to do it that way. And then my thought was, I really wasn't going to try to micromanage that based on that issue alone, but it would be more a need-based need to go faster, and we would just accept the consequence that it was clearly more expensive.
Well, and it's not as bad as it sounds on the surface either, because you're covering a lot more miles in at that faster speed.
That's true too.
Initially you hear the difference between, and I don't remember the numbers you said, but a gallon and a half an hour versus 19 gallons or an hour, something along that
To
line.
25 gallons an hour.
And but so it's not a 24 or 23 and a half gallon per hour difference across the whole loop. It's per hour, yes, but per mile, Yes. No, because
I've also covered 20 miles. Exactly. That's a very good point.
So, and it took me a while because I'm not a math person to realize that. So Michael would want to speed up and I'd be like, no, then we burned this many more gallons. And he's like, eventually like sat down and we worked all the math and I realized still didn't love, I'm a little more frugal than him. I still didn't love the extra cost, but I realized it wasn't as significant as my brain was thinking it was because there's a little bit of extra math you have to do there and you're covering a lot more distance at the faster speeds. So let's go ahead and take a break and play a message from our sponsors. And then we'll spend the bulk of the second half kind of talking about the things to look for and the way to do this right if you choose to move more quickly. So we'll be back in a moment. Did you know that 50 years ago, the first ever ChartKit was born? ChartKits are one of more than 100 chart products from MapTech to help loopers. MapTech's Embassy Cruising Guides and Anchorage Books are also a must for loopers. Go to their website, maptech.com, to get started. That's maptech.com. Want more? How about moremaptech.com? It's an interactive website with even more information for loopers. That's moremaptech.com. While you're there, check out MapTech's drone videos. These let you virtually navigate a destination before you get there. Just another aid for loopers. And thanks to MapTech, an AGLCA sponsor. Cross-country boat transport has been a family-owned company since 1991. We have three drivers with boatloads of experience transporting overdimension power and sailboats around the lower 48 states. If your perfect looping boat is on the wrong coast, give us a call or send us an email. We'll be happy to discuss transport and answer any questions you may have. Check out our website at crosscountryboat.com, where you can request a quote, view our gallery, and read testimonials from past customers. We're also the go-to for mass transport down to Mobile for our sailing loopers. We're back on the Great Loop Radio podcast. Today, we're talking about looping in a faster boat. And my guest is Tom Gutowski. He is sharing the details of his loop aboard a faster boat. You know, I think back 20 years ago, most loopers were on trawlers and they were going slowly. And as time has gone by and some of those older kind of, 1980s Asian built trawlers have kind of aged out, we actually see more motor yachts at our events now. And there are more motor yachts in our database than there are trawlers that our members have listed as their boats, which I think surprises a lot of people. A lot of people still seem to think that, you know, the best way to do the loop is on a trawler. Well, there's no best boat as long as you are safe. So talking about a faster boat and, we did the loop on a faster boat. Tom and Jan did the loop on a faster boat. But there are right ways to do it. And, you know, certainly we don't want loopers flying the Burgee to be out there creating egregious wakes that are dangerous and uncomfortable for others. And we don't want loopers to be viewed as discourteous. And Tom was great at making sure that that was the case. And sometimes, you know, faster boats, and we're guilty of it too. We see a boat coming up behind us really fast and we assume that we're going to get a huge wake. If the boater knows what they're doing, that's not going to be the case. So let's talk about that a little bit, Tom. And Tom's got a picture up. For those of you listening just to the audio, we will put a link to the YouTube video if you'd like to see the photos. But tell us a little bit about what you're showing us right now, Tom, and what you want this picture to bring forth for everyone.
Sure, Kim. So that's us at speed. By at speed, I mean, we're probably going about 18 knots right here. And that wake is probably 3 feet, 3.5 feet plus. And it radiates over a tremendous distance when you really think about it. And you can see we're in wide open spaces. By the time anyone would see that wake, it's dissipated significantly. But in tighter spaces, quieter places, busier places, you really do need to be cognizant of the fact that that is what your trail is like. So for instance, one of the things I would want to show the group would be what the implication of that wake might be. For instance, let's say you come across a paddleboarder or a kayaker, or there's a place where people are putting their boats in the water, and it's a little bit off to the side and you're chatting with the people on board, you may miss that peripheral action completely. And in so doing, you could miss something that could be potentially quite dangerous. So if you do have a chance to sort of look at the video portion of it, this would be an example of just such a slipway. Now, nobody's putting their boat in the water at this point, but if they were, that could be a very significant issue to those people. So I think you want to really monitor. And if you're going to go fast, it's contingent on you to be responsible for your wake. And you really need to keep reminding yourself of that, because you just get into this really nice space, you're moving right along, and you might forget the implications of the wake you're creating in your stern.
Yeah. And we hear complaints about this all of the time. And, nothing starts my day off poorly than getting an email that says, a member came through flying the AGLCA Burgee and they waked this whole marina. And I've said it before on our podcast. I think for the most part, when that happens, it is not a matter of the looper intending to be discourteous or dangerous. It's a matter of just not realizing what their wake is doing. So Tom's advice is great advice. Certainly look behind you. Some of the most egregious wakes we have gotten, I keep waiting for the person in the boat to turn around and look and see our boat rocking, at extreme angles and realize that they really should be slowing down. And usually that doesn't happen. So turn around, kind of look at what your wake is doing, because it can be dangerous. And Tom, you're kind of showing us a sailboat now. So explain this picture for us.
Kim, you give great advice at the looper conventions, et cetera, about how it's appropriate to either overtake a boat, meaning coming up on their stern, or taking on a boat, meaning it's going to be a head-to-head situation. Either way, you want to really take your wake down to a very manageable level. So the way to do it best is to call the boat that you're approaching. And if you're coming up from the stern, oftentimes you can see the name of the boat. So you'll hail that boat on your VHF radio, announce who you are and your intentions to overtake them in a slow way. What your hope is the captain will acknowledge that and say, great. And let's say they're moving at 5 or 6 knots, slow down to 2 or 3 knots so you can take them quite slowly. The difficult time is that they say, great, you can overtake me, but they continue to move forward at 6 knots. For me to overtake them, then I'm traveling probably at 7 knots. And at 7 knots, I have a sizable wake that I know is going to rock that boat. And that captain's probably going to be a little angry at me, but I have no alternative then. So I think what I'm really trying to hit on is that as you overtake the boat, announce who you are, very easily done, that you'd like a slow pass on their starboard side, or in this case, on their port side. The captain will acknowledge that. And if that captain doesn't slow down, as you're really getting close to them, you could say, Cap, could you just take it down a little bit and then I won't wake you at all. And then if they choose not to slow down, the consequence of my wake is really not my responsibility anymore. You offered them that option. But I would just emphasize announcing your intention that you'd like to take them down slowly. And if they really don't slow down, you can actually ask them, to take it down a few knots so that you don't wake them. And I found 99% of the time that works out wonderfully. And many times captains will then radio forward, geez, thank you very much for the slow pass, skipper, things like that. And it's just a really courteous occurrence right on through.
Yeah, and that is exactly how it should work, Tom. And I said earlier, Tom really does this right. And that's a great example because, I think I said it earlier. When you see a fast boat coming at you fast, getting ready to overtake you, because sadly it happens a lot, your first thought is generally, they're about to wake me. So, if you're out there looping in a faster boat, if you do this right, you're going to have a target on you. People are going to see you coming fast and expect that you are going to give them a huge wake. So know that you have that target and take the extra steps. And it's really not an extra step, it is the proper procedure. But do the courteous thing to do and arrange that slow pass. And absolutely, some of sides the boat being overtaken doesn't realize how much better it is for them to slow down. And communication is everything. So the reminder, just like Tom said, is going to make that whole thing go more smoothly. And, because faster boats can sometimes be a target, people are watching and they're going to see what you're doing, but they're also going to hear you on the radio before you get there if you're arranging a slow, courteous pass as you're kind of moving down the waterway. So it's a great thing to do. But Tom, there's some other things. Everybody knows no wake zones. I think not as common, particularly for some of our Great Lakes boaters who are used to being constantly out in wide open water. There are other things you need to look for. And you kind of mentioned the idea of paddle borders. You mentioned the boat ramp, which sometimes are marked as no wake zones, sometimes they're not. you know, we get into this, somehow wakes become controversial. And, you know, do you slow down when the entire waterway is filled with private docks that have boats at them? We're talking not so much about that, but about things that are truly dangerous, not just to property, but to people or to yourself. So give us some other, you know, times that there's things that you need to look out for, whether it's other things that you need to slow down for, even when not marked as an awake zone, or obstructions and things like that that can hurt you or your boat if you don't notice them.
You know, Kim, I think that's one of the real issues. If you choose to go faster, then I'd always, you know, you want to be cognizant of what the cost, and I'm not talking financial cost now, might be of your speed. We talked about the cost of your wake, but objects in the water, they come up on you so much more quickly. I mean, the example I'm showing now is fairly apparent, but that log may be like an iceberg, 90% underwater and only 10% above the water. And you may not see it until you're upon it. If you're going 8 knots, 6 knots, you're going to see it and be able to react much more quickly than you're in a fast boat. So if you're a fast boat captain, no problem, but you need to be a little more hyper-vigilant about when you're on watch, you're looking carefully, particularly in the rivers where there might be a lot more debris. And there'll be times where there seems to be debris everywhere and you're really careful then, and maybe you'll slow down. At other times, not, but you really do need to understand that if you hit something, albeit a sandbar or a moving object like a log or a tree stump, the implication to your boat is far greater if you're at speed. So safety is always the issue. Fast boats need to be very aware of hitting submerged or floating objects.
Yeah. Anything else that we've missed, Tom, that you would recommend captains of boats that intend to go faster should be aware of, or should, you know, make sure that they're looking for, or reasons to slow down?
You know, I think the reasons to slow down, if you can, and again, we went slow an awful lot, is that you just miss so much. I think that if there's one thing you hear, the captains of trawlers always kind of poke the fast boat guys, you know, what's your rush? You're missing so much of what you might be seeing. And I think that that's a very valid point. I do think if you're moving along at speed and you're in wide open places, there's not as much to see. If you're in the ocean, there's not as much to see. And those are personal preferences. You do want to slow down and smell the roses as you're moving along. So you do want to make sure you're looking at and seeing everything that this loop has to offer. But I really just didn't want to kind of get into that debate, the merits of going faster or slower from that perspective, as much as to just remind everyone that if you do choose to go faster, there are certain responsibilities that accrue to you greater than if you're a slower boat captain, and make sure you keep those things in mind.
Yeah, and those are very valid tips. And you're right that the you know, the argument that you hear from slower boat captains a lot is that, you know, you miss too much going fast, or you know, there's two different ways of going fast. One is the way you did it, Tom, still taking 10 months to do the loop, but just traveling fast between point A and point B occasionally. Mm-hmm. And then there's people who are out there truly trying to, you know, break a speed record of some sort that don't have a lot of time to stop and smell the roses. But, you know, when somebody wonders, well, did you see anything along the way if you were a faster boat? Well, even at traveling at 20 knots, is you're still picking up most of, in terms of the travel part, you're seeing the parts of the rivers and the waterways that everybody else is seeing. Yes, you're going a little bit faster. But if you think of it, to me, and this is my personal personal thoughts about it, but if you think about it, you know, highway speed is 70 miles an hour, and you still feel like you're kind of seeing what's going by. So even at 20, and we almost never went 20, but even at 20, I still feel like you're not missing too much on the water. You're traveling fast from point A to point B. But once you get to point B, you may be giving yourself more time to explore shoreside, which is something that, you know, the few times that we went fast, it was mostly because we had a long day planned. But I've known other faster boats who, you know, liked to do in 4 hours what everybody else did in 6 or 8, because then they would get into a town and have more time to explore and walk around and see the shops and restaurants and historic things. So it's truly just a personal preference, and there is no right or wrong way, but I really don't think somebody traveling fast and still taking 10 months is going to miss too much along the way. There's still a lot of time in that 10 months to smell the roses. So, you know, again, as long as you're being safe and courteous, which I think is really what we have focused on here, there's no wrong way to do it. Any other, just as we look towards wrapping up, any other tips or advice that you might have for somebody who's considering a faster boat so that they can have part of the time going faster?
You know, Kim, the only thing I would add, and I think you pretty much touched on it, is that everybody's loop is their own loop. You know, there's no template that everyone gets crunched into. And I think that's the beauty of the group, is that it really is an arms wide open. If you really choose to go fast, we can help you do that. If you'd like to go slow, we can help you do that. And we're trying to get anybody who wants to do the loop to do the loop. So if time constraint is important for you and you're just not going to be able to do it in the, say, trawler way, there's no question you can have a wonderful loop doing it more quickly. And to your point, you know, Jen and I are golfers, and we would make tee times in cities all over Canada, in the Great Lakes, and we would want to get in maybe around 1 o'clock and yet have done 50 miles. And if that seaway allowed us to do it, well, then our faster boat allowed us to do something that we really enjoy doing in a different way. But that's not everybody's thing. But we, you know, people have bikes. So the faster boat concept is something that a subset of loopers should be encouraged to think about if that's going to fit with your lifestyle best. And you can have an absolute blast doing it that way too. So the best thing about our group is that it really does allow for all comers to get involved. And as long as you're safe and understanding of other people's issues as you're doing it, God, you can do it a whole bunch of different ways, including more quickly.
Yep. I could not have said it better myself. Thank you for sharing that, Tom. And thank you for being here today to share the details of how to do it in a faster boat while still being safe and courteous. So I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kim, for having us.
Yeah. And thanks to everyone who has watched and listened this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Great Loop Radio podcast. Until then, safe cruising.